You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
That's right, believe it or not, it's already time once again to sit down with the Reverend Lampshade. That's right, Grandpa Lampshade, the host of your Church of the Lampshade show. It's Tuesday, folks. I'm glad you came around to visit with us once again. We always enjoy our visits, and we always enjoy our sermons dedicated and directed to the remnant of Christianity that's left in this world. There's not that much of us, to be honest. And if you're not a believer, that's okay, because, again, we have a visit at the beginning of the show that pretty much I think anybody can enjoy. And it's just that. It's just a visit most of the time. I don't even have any notes here. We're just going to talk about whatever comes to mind, whatever we feel like talking about. Of course, as always, I'd like to give out a personal thank you to the three supporters this past week who have sent support and for what we're trying to do here and for our struggles. And it is very much appreciated. And I've had a couple of people ask me this, so I thought this would be good a time as any to address it. Verifying, as I've had people, a month and a half ago, I sent you $34. Did you get it? Well, I don't know. And I've had people say, whoever sent the $20 this week, thank you, but there's several people, so how are you going to still know? And I've had people concerned, how do I know that you received it? Well, the answer is really quite simple. It just drop a little note in there with an email address and let me know, just let me know that you got this. That's what quite a few people have done, and I'm telling you, that's the best way to go. And also put a note on there if you want a copy of my first book, The Disappearing Middle, and I'll send that to you. If not, just say no book or whatever. But yeah, just put an email address in there. If you're concerned about anonymity, then just make a new email address that isn't connected to you at all. There's of course multiple places where you can do that, so just the best route there is to drop an email address in there, and I'd appreciate it because it gives me the opportunity to personally thank you. I personally thank anybody that puts an email address in there, and it means a lot to me, because it really does. It means a whole lot to me. And on that note, I don't think that, anything you can send, folks, is appreciated. Believe me, anything. If everybody that listens to the show sent a few bucks, would be in high cotton here in Lampshade land. And this brings me to the second topic that I've had several people ask me about, which is Grandpa Lampshade, our listener questions and comments officially back. Yes and no. Yes and no. First off, of course, the email address at the bottom of the description, which is grandpalampshade1@gmail.com. That's the best one to probably reach me with. Feel free to shoot me your questions, comments. I'm not going to say that every one of them's coming on the show, but I will try to answer every one of them. So if nothing else, I'll be happy. I've always been happy. And as long as I can, if this show were to grow to where, I had, 10,000 people a week sending me questions, comments, obviously I'm not going to be able to answer every one of those. But as it is now, I'm still able to do that, and I very much enjoy doing so. So if you have a question or comment, please feel free to shoot it to me. And if it's something that I think, we could really, which we've already done, by the way, if it's something that I think that, applies to a lot of people that would be interesting to put on the show, I'll do so. But either way, I'll try to answer your questions and comments. So there, it's kind of a yes and no. I'm not saying officially it's back, because again, I may not use everyone. But please, again, I enjoy the interaction with the listeners it's one of the really, it's always been one of the fun things about doing these shows. And that part's not changed, so don't hesitate. Again, if it's something that I think everybody will get something out of, yeah, by all means, I'm going to use it on the show. We've done it already, and we'll continue to do so. As you know, I've had the merchandise store up for, I don't know, a couple months now. And I'm just about pretty much ready to write that off. I opened that up in the midst, right after all of this, these attacks against me happened. It's just one of the many things trying to do in my own line of self-employment. And I purposely, you know, the designs I put up on the store were purposely like just Christian designs. There were no sunrise swastikas or anything like that, because I knew they, you know, that would get shut down right away. And I kind of did this in an experiment just to see. And I put the first design up, which Boat Sinker was graceful enough and kind enough to do for me. And after like a week or so, I get this email. They pulled the design. Well, of course, I jumped to the conclusion, you know, here we go. You know, just what I suspected. Because they don't tell you why. They just say, well, you know, design quality. And to find out why, you have to email the certain email address there. So I emailed these people. I'm like, why'd you pull my design? Well, it turns out I jumped to conclusions. They emailed me back and they're like, yeah, the background has to be transparent. Your background's not transparent. It's not going to look right when we put it on stuff. So, okay, no problem. So I go in and make the background transparent on the design, re-put it up, no problem. We rocking along then. Recently, I added a second design with the Tower of Babel on it and a Bible verse. And I paid a graphic designer who has lots of experience doing t-shirt designs and things such as this, because they're familiar with all of the protocols and what these people want. And I paid somebody to do this design for me, because I thought, well, if I can get a lot of designs, you know, because this was making very little, you know, bringing in very little money. So I paid a graphic designer, put this second design up. Okay, rock on for another couple of weeks. Well, then, lo and behold, they pull all of my designs. Everyone, Boat Sinker's design, this other one, pulled my designs. And again, in the email, it just says design quality. So I'm thinking, okay, now I really, I jumped to conclusions the first time. This second time, I think I know what's. So I email the email address. Because the first time they sent me a specific, your background's not transparent. Okay, no problem. So I emailed the second time. Why have you pulled all of my designs, even the ones with sales? Because I had sales on these designs. And this time they email me back and they just say design quality and give me a link to their vague thing that doesn't really actually tell you the requirements for your design quality. It just says, well, we can reject it if we don't think it's a high enough quality, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I pretty much figure we know why they've pulled it and shut it down. And I don't know if I'm going to try to do that on another platform. I don't know if I'm going to mess with it, be honest. Again, it hasn't equated to much money. I think the only way merchandising is going to really work is if I actually just purchase a bunch of product and turn around and do it through the mail. Y'all send me basically an order where to ship it, and I send it to you. And I just don't know that I want to mess with all that. It would amount to enough to fool with. So if you've noticed that the merchandise store is dead, yeah, that's why. So now you know what's up with that. And, okay, yeah, so those of you that do want to send support, do want to support what we're doing, do the show, you can do that the best way. I've got a Bitcoin address up at the bottom of the description. For better anonymity, I suggest some of y'all look into Zcash. I can create a Zcash wallet as well if you want. It's a lot more, if you want real privacy as far as crypto transactions, Zcash is the way to go. So it's something you might look into. But hey, nothing beats the old-fashioned mail. P.O. Box 6621, Granbury, Texas 76049. If you didn't catch that, it's all right, because it's all at the bottom of the description. I'll try to get all of that in there. So, yeah, here we go. We're rolling in to installment number 9 of the Church of the Lampshade Show. It's great to sit around with y'all once again this week. Oh, and before I forget, in case y'all don't know, I've been doing the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist along with Sven Longshanks every Friday. And I'm really enjoying it. It's something I really you know, it's that opportunity to go through a current news story or two. And of course, it's fun to sit with Sven again. And we used to do it on a regular basis with the Radio Aryan Roundtable. And so, yeah, you know, hey, by all means, on Fridays, Daily Nationals, Grandpa Lampshade, Sven Longshakes, and we get to go through some of the news stuff. And it's usually about a 30-minute or so show, so it doesn't take up a lot of your time. It's like a great little news blurb coverage and commentary, and a lot of fun. So again, Fridays, you can catch us here on the Daily Nationalist as well. I'm looking here in the near future to make some guest appearances on some other shows. I'll let you know how that, as it transpires, I will clue y'all in to those details. So one of the big things that happened this past week, you know, the House, I think it was House Intelligence Committee, something like that. They were holding hearings on the dangers of white supremacy, white nationalist. Basically, anybody that's pro-white now is, lo and behold, a terrorist, according to these people. And there's several interesting things. I know a lot of people have already talked about this, but I haven't had a chance to visit with y'all about it. And I watched most of this. I watched most of this hearing, and it was tough. Y'all should thank me. The things I go through for you folks, just so I can be informed on these things and discuss them with you. I watched most of this hearing. And what a shit show. It was just an amazing shit show. And there were several different things. For one thing, you know, these groups such as the ADL, they've always had like a separate definition, you know, white supremacist, white nationalist. And those definitions always were along the lines of a, you know, white supremacist, you know, who believes that the white race is superior and should rule over all the other races. And white nationalists, these people believe that white people should be separate from the other races and have their own nation. And I think it's very interesting that at this point in time, this junction in time, they are now intentionally, they're making a concerted effort now to conflate the two terms. You see this on Facebook, YouTube, etc. You know, Facebook just came out and said that any sort of white nationalist accounts that mention it, have anything that can be construed as promoting it, are being banned and shut down because they say it's indistinguishable. And now they can no longer tell the difference between white nationalist, white supremacist, and pro-white in general. So anything pro-white is now going to be shut down because it's white supremacy. And this hearing was much the same message, that there's no way white supremacy and white nationalism are the same thing. And so it's all got to be shut down, which, of course, equals anything pro-white has to be shut down. And I think it's interesting that they're choosing this time to do this and why they're doing it. And I think the reason is because, you know, if you say white supremacy, well, what are these white, you know, on the off occasion that someone actually forces these people to define these terms, which most of the time people don't, and that's what they count on. They count on people not demanding that they actually define what these terms mean, these scare terms. And so we say, okay, white supremacists, they think they're better than all the other races and that the whites should dominate the planet and subjugate the other races. And your average white person is going to go, well, yeah, no, that's shitty. We don't need to be subjugating people. Subjugating is bad. And, you know, okay, but then the same people turn around and ask, okay, well, then what's the difference? What are these white nationalists? White nationalists are almost worse. White nationalists believe that white people have the fundamental human right to have nations of their own separate from the other races. And there you have it. Even your average brain dead normie white person is going to be like, wait a minute. I mean, that doesn't really sound so scary. What's wrong with that? And so there obviously that this tells us that according to these people, there's something very wrong with it. And they want everybody, they want your average normie white person to find something wrong with it as well. But if they're honest, which they never are, if they're honest and they tell people, well, white nationalists believe that, you know, the races should just be separate. Black people have their own nation, brown people their own nation, so on and so forth. And the same for white people. Well, that just sounds way the hell too fair, doesn't it? This sounds too fair. It sounds way the hell too reasonable, doesn't it? Especially in this climate to where multiculturalism that they're forcing down our throats, all this diversity that they keep telling us is going to be our strength, things keep demonstrably getting worse and worse. Race relations are getting worse and worse. Of course, they point to those of us that tell the truth and point these things out. You know, they shoot the messenger, so as to speak. They shoot the messenger and say, well, the problem is that we keep pointing this out. That's the reason why it's not working. Not because, well, it's never really worked in human history ever. Now, they tell us the problem is people like us who speak the truth, who point these things out. So we have a climate to where the multicultural experiment, the more diversity we're getting, it's not being a strength. The more diversity we're getting, the shittier things are becoming, aren't they? I mean, they really are. I mean, it's anybody can see this, I guess, except for the willfully blind, because there's plenty of white leftists that sit there and go, no, diversity is my strength. Diversity is going to be our strength. We just need the diversity. Just need more of it. If we do more diversity, you know, we stuck our hand in the meat grinder and yeah, it hurts like hell and it ground my fingers off. But I'm convinced that if I keep pushing, the rest of my arm will not be ground off. In fact, my fingers will come back and things will actually be better. I'll have better use of my hand if I keep shoving it in the meat grinder. And of course, that doesn't happen. But yeah, there's people who are still just willfully. But for the average person who's willing to at least even notice, things are getting worse. The more diversity we get, the worse things are becoming. And, you know, the worse relations are between the races. The worse everybody, the more conflict. We're seeing more and more conflict. And as we see this rise in conflict, there's quite a chance that more and more normal white people might start saying, this isn't working out. I think we'd be a lot better off with everybody just in their own nations and we stop trying to do this diversity thing, which is obviously an abject failure. I mean, it's not that it's a bad thing in and of itself. It's just we've tried this and it's not working. I mean, if it worked, I wouldn't have a problem. I've said that before. If this was working, if all of this diversity was making the nation better, and life was better, and actually the more diversity we get, the more all the different races, these different religions, these different cultures, we're understanding each other, and we're really, man, things are better. It's just like, God, I've never loved my fellow man more than I do now. But it's not working. It's not working for anybody. They point to people like us and say, Nazis, that's why it's not working. No, because nobody thinks it's working. Except for those that are just so thoroughly brainwashed, they just refuse to see what's in front of them. But for your average person going through their day-to-day life, they see this shit is not working. And as it's not working, and as it's observable that it's not working, more and more people start thinking, well, it would be better to stop doing this and let these people have their countries and let us have our countries and our own nations and everything works out. But lo and behold, what does that make your average white person if they adopt that attitude? That's right. It makes them a white nationalist. And thus the effort now to purposely intertwine that with white supremacist, so that people relay this as an evil, bad thing, and they don't want to be an evil, bad thing. They don't want to be a Klan member burning down a black church or something. They don't want to be that. But so they have to conflate these terms, white nationalists and white supremacists. So we have this here. And this is one of the things they're attempting. This is part of the ongoing effort of conflating the two terms and, of course, demonizing anybody who dares to be pro-white. And you have this, so they have this hearing, and the irony of the entire hearing, it just, I don't know how these people can be so tone deaf. The irony of the hearing itself was just amazing to me. It really was, because the theme here is, These evil pro-white people, the foundation of their beliefs is the conspiracy that Jews are using other races to degrade, white nations, to basically replace white people, to ultimately subjugate white people. This is the overall theme, is that anybody pro-white basically believes in this conspiracy theory. And it's just a crazy conspiracy, fringe conspiracy theory that these people believe in. But then they turn around, they're so tone deaf, they turn around, they hold this hearing, and their entire panel, and like 90% of the people on the other side asking these questions, are all, they're like literally nothing but Jews and blacks complaining about white people. It was. You have nothing but Jews and blacks complaining about the evils of white people. They were sitting up there bringing out Jefferson quotes to essentially in the U.S. Congress to condemn Thomas Jefferson as essentially being a white supremacist. So that gives you a little clue. The irony, the tone deafness of this was just amazing to me. This is a conspiracy theory. Now, let's go over here to you, Shlomo. What do you think?
Oy vey. Yeah, it's a horrible conspiracy theory. I don't know why. Let's ask Shantiqua Jackson over here what she thinks about it.
They do white people. Let me tell you, Thomas Jefferson, he was the ultimate white supremacist. His whole nation just full of white supremacists. And I mean, anybody that bothered to watch this, and honestly, you know, obviously the average working person is too busy working. They don't even know this happens. But anybody that does bother watching this, it can't escape them that it's like, well, you know, hold on. Wait a minute. And so, yeah, you had people from Facebook and YouTube and Google there promising to work harder to shut down anybody that dares to be pro-white. Because if you're pro-white, you're automatically, you've got to be a terrorism. Yeah, you are. You've got to support the terrorism if you're pro-white. These are the same people that every time we have a Muslim attack, they're right there to the front of the line to condemn us, to condemn all white people for daring to notice that it's Muslims again. You're not supposed to notice that. No, you got to remember, now you can't judge all of these Muslims on the acts of a single individual. But yet, they sit here and say, they take something like the New Zealand mosque shooting incident, alleged incident, and they come out, and what do they say? They condemn anybody's pro-right, really all white people. They pull up a little short of that. Anybody that's pro-white, though, is automatically guilty. If you're sitting here pointing out and complaining that diversity doesn't work, if you're sitting here complaining that we have all these Muslims in our country and it's not really proving very beneficial, then you're as guilty as the guy that went into the mosque and allegedly shot a bunch of people up. People such as the chairman of the committee, a real shock here, Mr. Nadler.
Mr. Nadler.
Yeah, they is obvious that these people, their goal here is to basically label anybody who's pro-white as being a part of some sort of terrorism. Same people that forcibly turn a blind eye to any connection between Muslims and terrorism. Now, obviously, not every Muslim is a terrorist. I'm not saying that. I'm not sitting here being hypocritical on that. I'm actually pointing out their hypocrisy. There was one so-called civil rights lawyer on this panel, black, of course. And she was complaining because the FBI needs to do more. They need to do more to investigate all of these pro-white people. But she was complaining. She was upset because the FBI had dared to investigate a black nationalist, a black identitarian group. And she was very offended by this. They don't need to be doing that. They need to be investigating all of these white people. Very alarming. These people are—they're showing you their cards. They're showing—they're being very open about their intent. Of course, the average white person—they want to sit here and say, "Well, they're not talking about me. They're talking about people like you. You do these shows and point these things out. You make funny voices and upset the Jews and point out these things. And you say controversial things and you upset them. You should stop doing that. And they're not talking about me. I'm just an average guy going through my day-to-day life." People sit here and talk about accelerationism.
Accelerationism. And in our own circles, when people talk about accelerationism, they talk about actually supporting these evil leftist Marxist candidates in such in elections. The idea that things will get shitty faster and it will cause people to rise up and suddenly, you know, question mark, ethnostate. But the accelerationism we're seeing, though, that's actually taking place here is the acceleration on these people's part themselves. We have leftists now because they have these things like these hearings, and the average white person wants to believe this doesn't mean them. Even though they're basically openly, we're at the point now, they're ready, they're on this committee, they're demonizing Jefferson as being an evil white supremacist. You know, guess what, folks? Who else told you they weren't going to stop with tearing down Confederate statues? They're already lining up. Jefferson, you're next on the list. Robert E. Lee, once Robert E. Lee, or any just a statue for fallen Confederate soldiers. Once those all get pulled down, Jefferson is lined up next because he's a white supremacist. The average white person wants to believe this isn't going to apply to them. But it is. Obviously, it is. It is going to apply to them because as we see the actual accelerationism, which is coming from the leftists, there are leftists now raising hell and complaining because they say that Trump's one of Trump's top advisors on like immigration stuff, Stephen Miller, is now he's a white supremacist. Never mind, the guy is a Jew. Okay, the guy's a Jew, but he dares to speak common sense to this immigration thing. So the leftists now, the Marxists, are now attacking Stephen Miller, who is a Jew, and they're calling him a white supremacist. There was an incident out in California a couple of weeks ago where this old Jew with a Trump hat on is sitting in a coffee shop and this leftist Marxist woman starts screaming. She doesn't realize he's a Jew. She starts screaming and berating him and calling him a Nazi, calling him a white supremacist. This is the real accelerationism that I support, by the way. Yeah, you know, I'm not buying in. I'm not necessarily bought in on the idea that if we can get more of our enemies who wanted to deem us all domestic terrorists into power, that's going to somehow work in our favor. I'm not necessarily on board with that. I don't necessarily see that. I don't necessarily see giving our enemies more power as being a benefit to us. But here is a version of accelerationism that our enemies are doing that I very much support. They are at the point they're running around now calling Jews Nazis and white supremacists. And white supremacists. The more these leftists, the more these Marxists will go around and accuse everybody. We want them. This is what we want. We want them accusing. When you see stories like this and you shake your head and go, that's horrible. No, it's not horrible. This is what we want them to do. We want them to call every white person, for whatever reason, a white supremacist. We want them calling as many Jews as possible who might actually go, yeah, I'm not on board with this. We want them calling these Jews white supremacists. Yeah, yeah, because it drives the message home to your average person that this is going to mean you. They do mean you. They're already saying it's you openly themselves. It's a funny thing saying that. I'm starting to see more and more. I read an article here recently. And written by a Jew talking about importing all these people is a really bad idea. Why are we doing this? I mean, what have the white people done to us? It's really so bad. And I find that very interesting. And I was pointing that out, and I had several people say, well, yeah, Grandpa, but this is just another case of the Jews doing, you know, what's best for the Jews. And in that view of what's best for the Jews, they're seeing that this is a bad thing. And I'm saying it doesn't matter. Yeah, they're viewing it as what's best for the Jews. Of course they are. Hell, I wish white people would sit here and go, what's best for white people? They won't. They want to sit here and be altruistic and stupid. There's nothing wrong in and of itself with the Jews viewing things as what's best for the Jews. That ought to be human nature. We should do that. We're the ones that are out of line with nature on that. You know, black people view things what's best for black people. You know, but there's nothing. That's natural. That's normal. Okay. Yeah. The Jews kind of have an extreme version of it, and their version of it gets twisted around to where they actually do things that are self-destructive to the Jews. But in their ultimate weird, twisted view, oftentimes, of what's best for them is somehow destroying us and undermining and subverting our societies. But the idea, the very base notion, and some of y'all are going to have a real problem with it, but really the base notion of the Jews having this approach of what's best for the Jews, that's in line with nature. What's out of line with nature is this view, this altruistic view that so many white people have of not viewing anything in the light of what's best for white people. White people have become so brainwashed. Yes, and I realize the Jews have had a hand in that. Yes, I get that. But the thing is still, the fact remains, we are the ones, that white people are the ones that are out of line with nature on this. White people are the one that absolutely refuse. They've been convinced that it's morally wrong to view anything as far as what's best for our group. That brings us back to the point of, you know, I'm starting to read some articles here and there written by Jews saying this isn't so much a great idea. And yeah, they're writing that in the view of what's best for the Jews. But here's one of those cases where it doesn't matter because it lines up with, yeah, destroying our white nations may not be a good idea. If these Jews over here agree with that, then so be it. More power to them. Yes, they're doing it for their own selfish reasons. So what? So what? It helps us. They get it. They you got a few Jews now starting to come out and say, yeah, importing all these Muslims and people from Africa and the third world, this isn't going to work out real well for us. And really, if we weren't doing this, maybe, you know, we wouldn't be catching the flack as a group that we're starting to see now. Ding, ding, the light has gone off. Why would you go out? Why would you go out and criticize a Jew for writing an article like that or making statements like that? Save me the Grandpa Lampshade. Now you're just cucking on the Jews. No, this is common sense. Somebody is saying something that helps us, more power to them. Yes, they're doing it for their own in-group benefit. They're not doing it for some weirdo altruistic reason for us. So be it. We're the ones that are supposed to be watching out for our in-group as well. But the fact remains that if it's something positive, it's something speaking out against the destruction of our nations, then so be it. Hallelujah. Yes, more power to them. You see, so much for the caricature that we just go around hating the Jews for no reason whatsoever. I have more power to it. Hey, Stephen Miller, you know, great. You know, Stephen Miller is like now the only hardcore guy left. Since they ran Bannon off, Stephen Miller is now like the only hardcore guy left in the Trump administration. He really is, and he's a Jew. So be it. On this immigration stuff, does he mean it? Yeah, but Grandpa, he probably doesn't even mean it. It doesn't matter. Because Trump's not going to do anything anyway. That's like the latest thing they're talking about. I'm looking at the clock when you get into the sermon, but it's like the latest thing they're talking about. You know, Trump's latest tweet threat, which never seemed to come to pass. We were going to have the border shut down and it never happened. Now he's giving Mexico a year to get their shit together, whatever. You know, but the latest tweet threat is that they're gonna ship any of these people coming across the border, we'll just ship them to these sanctuary cities that claim they want them. We'll ship them there. Of course, Trump's not going to follow through with it. But the thing is, they're saying that notion, that idea is being pushed by Stephen Miller. I think it's funny. I think, yeah, sure. I think it's a great idea. These sanctuary cities say they want all these people. Let's give it to them. Let's give them what they want, good and hard. And he's a Jew. Does he have ulterior motives? Maybe so. But on this one issue, why not? You know, why be critical of it? I think it's a lulzy idea. Again, it doesn't matter because Trump's not going to actually do it. He's just talking shit like he always talks shit. He's not going to follow through. He's not going to do anything. Just talk a bunch of crap, put it a bunch of crap up on Twitter, and then do nothing. That's pretty much what we're going to get. But yeah, I thought the idea was good. Stephen Miller is like the only hardcore guy left in the Trump administration. He's letting his daughter and, you know, then you have the other Jew that's influential in the Trump administration, his son-in-law, Kushner. So then we have two, like they say, there's like two opposing forces here. Both of them Jews. You know, well, you've got these two opposing forces. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring with Miller because, you know, he's the one pushing an agenda that I think is beneficial for us, for our nation. So be it. Look, folks, sometimes you got to take what you get. And in this instance, yeah, I mean, Stephen Miller's like the only hardcore guy left in the Trump administration. It's probably only a matter of time before they push him out. It's just like we have his daughter and her husband are the ones actually running the country. They're the one running around. He's the one setting up all of these things. And all this. Who elected these people? So, yeah, anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny that, again, it's like the one that you look around the Trump administration, the one hardcore guy, especially when it comes to this immigration stuff, is Stephen Miller. Yeah, he happens to be a Jew. So be it. Again, his positions he's taking on this stuff, I think, are overall beneficial. You take it where you get it, folks. You take your wins where you get it. I'm sure I'll catch hell for that. I'm sure I'll catch tons of accusations now that I'm somehow cucking to the Jews or some nonsense. But, folks, you're going to have to get smart. We've got to get smart on how if we're going to get anywhere. We've got to get entrenched, and we've got to look for places where we get wins for our people or for our nations. We got to look for those opportunities, and we got to grab a hold of them, and we got to broaden and expand our ideas, our strategies on how we can do that. We can't keep running around shooting ourselves in the foot. We see something that's beneficial to us, grab it. Grab it. Doesn't mean you're married to it forever. Just grab it and ride it as far as you can. And when things look like they're turning another direction, toss that aside and look for your next opportunity. But we've got to find a way to counter this disaster. It's already here. It's not like, oh, well, this is going to get bad. Folks, it's bad. It's bad. Really. I mean, really. Even if you're a leftist, and I know leftists listen because they listen to my show to try to find something they can use against me. If you're a leftist, be honest. Just be honest with yourself. I mean, look across the nation. Are the races getting along better now or worse? And you can sit here and say, oh, well, that's because of people like you. No, it's not. Well, let's be honest. No, it's not. It's time to get real. We're making things, this stupid diversity experiment, it's making things worse for everybody. It is. It's making things worse. It's making people hate each other. It's making people do irrational, crazy things. It's driving people over the edge. People are at each other's throats. It's not making things better. You can hate the messenger all you want to. You can blame the messenger all you want to. But if the messenger goes away, things are not going to magically get better. It's like blaming the weatherman because it rained on your weekend that you were planning on having a picnic. Now, you can blame the weatherman all you want to, but the weatherman didn't bring the rain in. It was a low pressure front. You know, the point is that, you know, things are not getting better. It's time to ask yourselves why. Why are things not getting better? Why is it that the more of this we're pushing, the more people are hating each other? And that's not a good thing. I know you people want to believe that people like us promote hate. No, that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. But we're getting more of it. The more diversity that we get. Okay, that wraps up our pre-sermon visit. Hope you enjoyed it. I always enjoy the visit. And then again, yeah, those of you who are non-Christian believers, this is your cue. You're probably going to want to head out. If you want to stick around for this week's sermon, you're obviously more than welcome, but save me the complaints and the any sort of, you know, spurging about Christianity. You've been warned. This is the Church of Lampshade, and we're going to get in here and start this week's sermon. So get in here, folks. Fill those pews. That's right. It's time for the actual Church of the Lampshade sermon on the Church of the Lampshade show as I put on my Reverend frock coat and step up here, step up to the pulpit as I see all of you coming in and filling the pews. It's good to see you once again this week and to have all of us gathered here together. And as you get in here and settle into the pews, I thought we would discuss this week a little bit about corruption of your heart and the way in which you become corrupted from within. You know, for Jesus said, it's not what you take in through your mouth that, you know, drinking or whatever that makes you unclean. It's what comes out of your mouth that makes you unclean. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about the different ways in which we become susceptible to becoming corrupted. That's kind of what we're going to do this week. We've got several Bible verses, several scripture verses here to kind of lay the groundwork for our discussion this week. So let's go ahead and get that out of the way. Let's start with that. Let's look at the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 27. This is Jesus speaking. Ye have heard it that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. We're going to come back to this. I want to go ahead and skip over here and read this other verse of scripture, and then we'll come back to this because this is really going to get to the heart of our topic this week. Let's skip over here to the book of Luke, chapter 11. Let's start at verse 21. This, again, is Jesus speaking. When a strong man, armed, keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and finding none. He saith, I will return unto my house whence I came out. And when he cometh, he findeth it swept and garnished. Then goeth he, and taketh to him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Now let's go back to the opening passage of scripture. You've heard it said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. When you first read this, it just simply comes off, and it's not necessarily incorrect, but your first impression is that Jesus is saying that, you know, I'm not here to water things down. I'm here to hold you to a higher standard. You say, don't commit adultery, but I'm telling you, if you look lustfully after women, then you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. But I think there's something a little deeper here. I think there's something else we can also take from this. This is often the case with scripture. You get additional meanings out of them, and it doesn't make, you know, the original interpretation that Jesus is saying, I'm not here to water things down. I'm actually here to hold you to a higher standard. It doesn't make it incorrect, but it's just that these things are so spiritual and so deep that you can actually find additional messages here, additional meaning for you in your life. And I think this is the case with this. And in that line of thought here, we focus on the last part. You've committed adultery with her already in his heart. It's already committed adultery in his heart. Now, at that time, you know, adultery was something you could be, you know, like the Muslims, you could be drug out in the street and killed over. So, wow. So Jesus is saying that you've already basically imposed a death sentence on yourself here, because that's kind of the context of the time. But I think the fact here of in your heart is very interesting. And this is going to tie in with the second verses of scripture that we just read. You think about this. If you look at a woman lustfully with a lustful desire, if you've already committed adultery in your heart, what other sorts of sin are you committing that you haven't actually acted upon, but you've committed in your heart? What other sorts of things have you lusted after in your heart? If you've sat around, what kind of, have you committed murder in your heart? Have you sat around and thought about that? And you sit around and lust after things, after money. If I was filthy rich, boy, who hasn't done this one, huh? Really, who hasn't? If I was filthy rich, I would buy this, I would buy that, I would have me whatever you think you would want to have, a yacht or whatever. They're lusting after these riches, which actually is idolatry. We commit these, you've committed these, everybody's committed these, some sort of these sins in your heart. But the in your heart part is what's interesting to me. And especially when we look at that second, the second batch of scripture that we read about the spirits. You clean yourself of these spirits. It's like, okay, you repent of this and you try not to do this. But the thing is, that spirit, when you commit these things in your heart, like the adultery here in this case, you've committed this in your heart and you allow this to take root in your heart. It goes out. And you wind up, it doesn't stop there. It goes out and finds more spirits, more wicked than itself. And they all come to reside there. And the state of the man ends up being worse than when he started. I think that sometimes we get so focused on the things we do. And that is important. I mean, you don't want to go committing sins. But we fail to ignore those other things. The things we entertain in our minds, the things, those thoughts you entertain in your mind that you're actually inviting these others is illustrated here as a spirit. You're entertaining these other spirits to come into your heart. And you may think it's harmless because you're not actually acting on these things. But what Jesus is warning you here of in the case of adultery is that you're opening the door. You've committed adultery already. In your heart, you're already opening your heart up to corruption. Where does that come from? This comes from your mind. You're sitting here, you're entertaining these thoughts. Man, I look at her, man. Whew, oh, and you start thinking about, and it becomes, again, these. It all often comes back to idolatry, doesn't it? You're putting these lusts, these fleshly things, things of the earth, you're putting these things above God. You're sitting beside God. You're looking lustfully at this woman. Covetousness. These things, such as this, and they corrupt your heart. And what happens is it doesn't stop there. You start coveting other things. You started off coveting your neighbor's wife. Now you're coveting money. Now you're coveting power. Now you're imagining all these things you would do if. And in those imaginations, you often imagine yourself. You think, boy, I'd show these people. But what you're imagining is actually sin. How many times have you gone through a situation and afterwards, because I'm real bad about this, by the way. I am, I'm bad. You know, like you have an interaction with somebody and afterwards, you know, you interact with somebody, maybe in a confrontation, you have a confrontational interaction with somebody. And afterwards, you go back over it in your head, you know, and you think, man, I should have said this. I should have done this. I should have. And it just starts building and it starts building up. You know, I should have done this. I should have said this. And but then you stop and actually reflect on, OK, what would that actually look like? If I went over the top in my reaction that way, what would that really have looked like? I mean, really, what would have been the outcome of that? What would have been gained from that? And oftentimes, I think if you really are realistic about the way you originally handled the situation, you probably handled it just about right. Yeah, you think, yeah, I should have popped that sumbitch right in the mouth, what I should have done. You know, but then you look at the ramifications of that. And in the end, the way you handled it was probably the correct, more righteous route to go. But you entertain these thoughts and you start criticizing it. Oftentimes, you know, if you break it down, your self-criticism, you're actually criticizing yourself for not being more sinful. You're criticizing yourself for not being more sinful. You're actually criticizing yourself for handling things in a fairly righteous manner. When you get down to it, you're being self-critical. You should have done this. You know, I should have picked picked up this big stick, you know, and just busted every window out of their car. That would have taught them. And instead, you looked at them, shook your head, and drove away. You didn't get caught up in a stupid road rage incident or something like that. But you wind up later thinking, man, that stupid guy. I should. What would he have thought of if I'd have just smashed into his car and backed up and smashed into it again? But what you're actually imagining, the thoughts that you're entertaining here. Okay, so if you would have, let's say you would have, you're in a road rage incident and you backed your car up and smashed into their car, and what? What if you would have injured or killed somebody in that car? Then you would be guilty of murder. You murdered somebody. But see, when you're entertaining that thought, yeah, you didn't actually do that. Your self-restraint kicked in and you didn't do that. But when you sit around and imagine doing that, you're committing that sin in your heart. You see, you're corrupting your heart, and it is corruptive because you're criticizing yourself for handling it properly. And the more you do that, the more likely it becomes, more difficult it becomes for that part of you that says, whoa, what are you doing? You know, you're going to ruin your life because you're mad because somebody cut you off in a parking lot? Really? You're going to ruin your life over that? It gets harder for that voice of reason to be heard. The more you entertain that voice that says, show these people who they are. And it's a prideful voice, by the way. Show these people. How do they think they are? They know who you are. Smash into their car. That'll show them. And you see these news stories and people do these over-the-top things. Especially, the road rage is the first thing that comes into my mind. Road rage, it happens fairly regularly. You know, some guy gets mad because of the way some idiot drives. And often you look at it and the person that this violence is pointed towards deserves it in a way. I mean, they were the original instigator. They always say the same thing. You know, when they ask the victim of the road rage, say, I was driving down the highway. I wasn't doing anything. Yeah, bullshit. You were cutting people off. You were being a dick. You were flipping people. You don't get these kind of sermons in cut church, I tell you. I come into you, I'm going to tell you how it is. We're going to be real here. We didn't sit here and chat sugarcoat things. We're going to tell you how things really are. We're going to meet you where you're at. We're going to talk to you like you can hear it. That person was going down the road flipping people off. They were screaming out the window, F you. Who do you think flipping them off? And the guy snaps. Then the guy whips a gun out and points it out the window at him. Oh, now things just got real. Now the cops are involved. Or the guy followed them to their house and smashed into their car, injured somebody. Or the guy actually fired his weapon and killed somebody. And now I see these stories and I always think, now your ass is in jail. Because you usually see these stories like the next day. Yesterday, a road rage incident. A man pulled a gun and shot these people in their car. And I'm thinking, you were mad then. But now your ass is sitting in jail. Now you feel stupid because now you're not mad. Now you're sitting here going, what the hell did I do? And now I'm facing prison. And your ass going to prison because they done caught you. You got the gun. They caught you. They know it was you that shot these people. And your ass going to jail. Now you're not mad. You were mad at the time and you couldn't see nothing but was right in front of you. You're going to show these sumbitches. Who do they think they are doing this to you? Who do they think they are flipping you off, cussing you out? Oh, I'm going to show you. You're going to find out today, come hell or high water. Well, hell or high water's here because now you're sitting in a jail cell and you're looking at prison because you were mad. And you did this. I always think, how do those people feel? But yeah, we've all been there at some point in time. You think that voice that says, show these sumbitches who they're dealing with. The thing is, we hear these stories and it seems like such irrational behavior. Why do people do these irrational things? Why would you ruin your whole life? There's a guy that looked for all practical purposes, looks like he got his stuff together, and yet he snapped and shot somebody up over a road rage incident. Why? And I believe it starts with the way you corrupt your heart. When you have a road rage incident, you have an incident with somebody flipping you off, I mean, you just shake your head, whatever, idiot, you know, because that person's still going to drive like shit. You know, the next week, they're probably out flipping people off again. The people are stupid. They do dumb stuff, but you're still sitting in jail. But every time that you take the correct path, What happens is you do the correct thing. You let that guy off. You know, can smash that voice inside your head says, what are you doing? You're going to smash into their car. But if I did that, tomorrow I'm going to be sitting in jail. Then what? You know, but afterwards, every time you're self-critical, and you're sitting there, you start imagining it, you know, because you're still mad. You've had this incident. You didn't do nothing. You went home, but you're still stewing over. Now your day's ruined. You're laying there at night and you're thinking, man, that guy, I tell you what, if I would have just imagined the look on their faces, if I just smashed into their car and then got out with my pistol, then just imagine they'd have been sorry then, wouldn't they? But the thing is, you're committing the sin in your heart and you're corrupting yourself. The longer you entertain this in your mind, you're laying there at night and you spend an hour thinking about the look on their face. Okay, well, guess what? Next month, a similar thing happens. What's more likely? Are you going to be more or less likely to do the right thing in this incident? Because you've planted that seed, you've corrupted your heart. You spend an hour laying in bed imagining the look on their faces and showing them. And lo and behold, now here's somebody else doing the same thing. You see, the way you handled it originally, when you just shook your head and watched them as they exited off the freeway and thought, what an asshole. You see, the way you handled it originally was the righteous, correct way to do it. You know, you didn't injure anybody. You didn't destroy their property. You didn't kill anybody. You handled it. You didn't commit the sin of murder. You didn't do that. You handled it right. But when you look back on it, still angry, what do? You commit those sins in your heart. You commit the sins in your heart. You plant that seed. You commit it. You have put that in your heart, in the back of your mind. You may think, I just think about it. You may later kindly cool off and think, I'm not going to do that. But you planted it. You've committed it in your heart. You have committed it to your heart. You've planted that seed. And yeah, the next time you may still handle it the correct way. But if you keep doing that, if you keep corrupting your heart, if you keep committing the sin in your heart, you increase the likelihood of actually committing it indeed. And I believe this is something here that Christ is warning us about. You just build on it. In the actual scripture that Christ uses, when you lust after a woman, you've already committed adultery in your heart. Okay, but you'd say, well, I'm just looking at her. I'm going to think about her later. And, I'm going to commit adultery. You know, that's my neighbor's wife and all and everything. I'm not going to commit adultery. But, she fine. Oh, she fine. Man, I'd love to. But then what happens? Then the next time you're visiting with your neighbor's wife, you're just flirting a little bit. You know, you're not going to do anything. You're just kind of playful flirting around. You're not even really flirting. We're just being neighborly. I mean, just being friendly. And then one thing leads to another. You started off thinking, thinking about these. See, I'm not actually going to do it. But you've already planted it. You've planted that seed. You've committed it in your heart. I like to say committed it to your heart. You've planted that seed there and it's going to grow. And it doesn't stop. You wind up being open to all sorts of other things, as the scripture warns us. That spirit goes out, finds seven other more wicked than itself, and comes back, and your state winds up worse than when you started. When you started committing these sins to your heart. Look, folks, I want you to be realistic with yourself. You have to have realistic expectations. You're gonna commit these sins in real life. You're gonna commit these sins in your heart. Why? Because you're in a failed state. You're in this body. You're in this world. We as Christians strive to not be of this world, but like it or not, you're in this world. That means you're in this flesh. It means you have the same fleshly weaknesses as anybody else out there. If you think that Jesus is magically going to make you not have the same fleshly weaknesses as everybody else out there, you're in for a big disappointment, and you're going to be frustrated and disappointed in your faith. That's not how it works. I don't want you to get discouraged because you try again, but you kind of have the same failings over and over again. Look, what's important is you got to keep trying and trying again. As long as you're in this body, as long as you're in this world, you're going to have failings. That's realistic. Really, I mean, don't get discouraged because I keep praying and I keep trying to lead a righteous life, but I keep finding different parts of my heart where there's failings. In the book of Romans, chapter 7, verse 14, the Apostle Paul says, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that I do not. But what I hate, that do I." I don't know how righteous you are, but I'm willing to bet Paul, you know, who actually had a real life encounter, you know, with Jesus on the road to Damascus, I'm pretty sure he was probably a more righteous, more in tune with Christ than you are. It was a pretty safe bet. And yet he's saying, that which I do not want to do. Look, I struggle with this. I have this thing. I have these thoughts. This is what I want my life to look like. I want to be this perfect, righteous person. And yet, that which I want to do I do that? No. No, these sins, the sinful failings, that which I do not want to do, this I keep on doing, and I am so frustrated with it, is what the Apostle Paul is saying here. Look, Paul is saying he was dealing with this. Trust me, you're going to deal with it too. I don't want you to get discouraged with that, because it's easy to start thinking, you get frustrated, and you're like, I had this vision, I want to be this perfect person. You're not going to be a perfect person in this world, but you can tend to what goes in your heart, to what you plant in your heart. Keep pulling those weeds out. Recognize when you are committing these sins in your heart, and thus you are committing these sins to your heart. And as harmless as it may seem harmless. You may think, oh, well, it's a little bit. No, you're still planting a seed there, and ultimately it is liable to grow up into a weed in your heart. And when you see those weeds in your heart, you need to pull them out. You need to try to get those out as best you can. And it's an ongoing exercise. Don't get discouraged. When you go pull weeds in your yard, you're never done. You go a week later and there's more weeds in your yard. You got to pull them out. But the point is, if you don't pull them out, your yard will be nothing but weeds. Your yard will be overrun with weeds. So you've got to keep pulling them out. But you have to recognize them for what they are. And recognize the danger of what you plant in your heart. We're going to wrap up this week's edition of the Church of the Lampshade. I hope you got something out of this week's sermon. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you'll join us next week. Don't forget, you can also catch me on with Sin Longshanks on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist. Lots of fun. We go over news stories of the day, and it's just a quick, it's usually around a 30-minute or so show. We often run a little over, but it's a fun discussion, so be sure and catch us there. Again, if you want to support what we're doing, If you're really spiritually blessed with what we're doing on the show, I encourage you to look down, and we've got all the information there where you can send your support for myself and what we're trying to do here. So once again, thank you for joining us this week, and we'll be back next week once again for the Church of the Lampshade.